जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, 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 जय गोपी जन बाला गिरिभर धारी, जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिभर धारी, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जमुना तीरा बना छारी, जमुना तीरा बना छारी, जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare. Jaya Radha Madhava, Radha Madhava Sri Radhe. Jaya Radha Madhava, Radha Madhava Sri Radhe.
Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotarashtata Shishimad Vibhavayuva Teisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki. Saparivraja Gacharya Ashtotarashata Shishimadhi Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Shila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki. ISKCON Founder Acharya Shila Prabhupada Ki Grantara Shimam Bhagavatam Ki Itai Goura Premanandi. O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to Shishiguru and Shiguranga. So Krishna Archana is giving the class, but no transportation, no, the public transportation is different today because of holiday. So she's stuck in some station somewhere, so she's coming. So I'm gonna start reading the verse, and then when she comes, you can take up from there. For everybody who's someone listening in the internet, so that's the situation.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, entitled The Summon Bonum, Chapter 21, the Gopis glorify Krishna's flute, text number 20.
Evam Bhida Bhagavato Javrindavanacharina Varnayantyo Mito Gopya Kridastan Mayatanjaju Evan Bhidha Bhagavato Javrindavanacharina Varnayantyo mito gopya Kridastan mayatam jaju Evan bhidha bhagavato Javrindavanacharina Varnayantyo mito gopya Kridastan mayatan jaju. Evan pida bhagavato Javrindavanacharina Varnayantyo mito gopya Kridastan mayatan jaju. Evam bhidha bhagavato Javrindavanacharina Varnayantyo mito gopya Kridastan mayatan jayuhu Evam bhidha Such Bhagavataha of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yaha, which Vrindavanacharinaha, who was wandering in the forest of Vrindavan, in the Vrindavan forest, Varnayantyaha, engaged in describing Mitaha among one another, Gopyaha the Gopis, Kridaha the pastimes, Tat Mayatam fullness in ecstatic meditation upon him. Jayuhu, they attain. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Thus narrating to one another the playful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he wandered about in the Vrindavan forest, the gopis became fully absorbed in talks of him. So Krishna Archana is here and she will read the purport as soon as she sits.
So the purport to text 20 is as follows. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada comments, this is the perfect example of Krishna consciousness to somehow or other remain always engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. The vivid example is always present in the behavior of the gopis. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya declared that no one can worship the Supreme Lord by any method that is better than the method of the gopis. The gopis were not born in very high Brahminical or Kshatriya families. They were born in the families of Vaishyas, and not in big mercantile communities, but in the families of cowherd men. They were not very well educated, although they heard all sorts of knowledge from the Brahmanas, the authorities of Vedic knowledge. The gopis' only purpose was to remain always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Thus, in the purports of the humbled servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, on the 10th canto, 21st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled, The Gopis Glorify the Song of Krishna's Flute. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandoja Gatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapsa Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mancha Kalpas Rubya Shakripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasnaya Bhutale Srimati Rumpada Swami Iti Namine Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasnaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Pashitya Deshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My apologies, I completely forgot it's a public holiday, so I was timing myself for the metro train, which takes 5 minutes to arrive. Instead, I had to take the subway, and that takes a lot longer. So, was the word for word done? Okay. So, I'll just read the translation. Thus, narrating to one another the playful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he wandered about in the Vrindavan forest, the gopis became fully absorbed in the thoughts of him. So, this particular verse is summarizing the chapter, the last verse of the chapter, and it's spoken by Srila Sukadev Goswami. And it's interesting, in the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, he actually expands a little bit the summary, and he says that the gopis were describing Krishna's flute playing, his forest rambling, and also his cowherding pastimes. So three different categories. And through this description, the gopis actually attained the platform of spiritual realization that is particularly extraordinary because the platform is such, and these words that were used in this verse, tan maya tam, which is actually translated as they achieved a fullness in their ecstatic meditation on Lord Krishna. And this fullness in ecstatic love is defined in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as something that remains. So it's constantly there. And the comparison is made to the same way that ecstatic love constantly remains there. It's equivalent to how a powerful king always remains in a position of power. And the definition extends further to this fullness in ecstatic love, that it also overrides, this is the definition, it overrides any or subdues any temporary manifestation of love, as well as any opposing elements of anger. So it seems in loving affairs, anger often accompanies the emotions in relationship to the object of one's love. I mean, in mundane relationships, one has the experience that there's some design one expects to some degree that the object of one's love is reciprocating with those desires. So if the desires are hampered in some way or not met in some way, there's an accompanying kind of anger. So this fullness in ecstatic love that the gopis have is actually eliminating that component of anger. So very interesting. this is, again, coming from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The ecstatic love, it actually gets shown either directly or indirectly. And it's only actually possible to be in that or show that kind of fullness in ecstatic love or be experiencing that when one's in a fully transcendental position. So there's a listing that's given by Srila Rupa Goswami, getting back to Rasamrita Sindhu, of this direct exhibition of ecstatic love. And in a relationship of conjugal love, which is the relationship where the gopis are seeing Krishna as their husband. And this is the listing of the way you can recognize, I mean, it's not our, I mean, it'd be very difficult to fully understand, but this is Srila Rupa Goswami describing that that fullness of ecstatic love has got seven expressions, so to speak, and these are the expressions. there's laughter, there's astonishment, there's chivalry, there's lamentation, there's anger, and dread. So notice anger is listed here, but it's on a transcendental plane. So now that's the direct expression, and the indirect expression of this fullness of ecstatic love, it reads very much the same with an additional one. So it's recognized in seven different kinds of exchanges that form this ecstatic love, and so that one will see smiling, astonishment, enthusiasm, lamentation, anger, dread, and sometimes ghastliness. So so you notice this ghastliness isn't present in the previous one that was the direct expression. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur He says, he explains that the gopis had actually engaged in intimate pastimes with Krishna, and it was afterwards that they attained the state of atanmayatam, which is the verse, this absorption in ecstatic meditation upon Krishna's pastimes. And to use Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's expression, they attained an enchantment in transcendental ecstasy. So actually, I thought that word enchantment is quite extraordinary, because there is a certain extreme beauty in hearing the gopis glorifying the flute. So this word enchantment is quite lovely, because it certainly pinpoints the mood that they're having in expressing their ecstatic love. So I'm going to read from Srila Kavi Kanapura something of how he explains how the gopis were avoiding explicitly explaining these intimate pastimes that they had with Krishna. So they were speaking in a kind of hidden but humorous way. So remember, laughter is one of the expressions of this fullness in ecstatic love. So there's a lot of humor in how they express themselves. So we heard today this entire chapter is actually the leaders of each group of gopis were speaking two verses of praise. But at the same time of speaking, there was a feeling of apprehension about revealing their inner mood. And based on the definition of both the direct and indirect expressions of ecstatic love, one can recognize the components, some of the components at least. In Nectar of Devotion, the breakdown of these expressions of ecstatic love, the laughter, the astonishment, the chivalry, the anger, the dread, the ghastliness, it's broken down by Srila Rupa Goswami in relation to the cowherd boys. It's not directly related to, let's say, these prayers done by the gopis, where one could say, okay, this correlates with this expression, or this expression correlates with this particular prayer. So it's not done that way in Nectar of Devotion. But, I mean, one can at least recognize to some degree the humorous aspect. So, so an example of this state of ecstatic love, that where there's some lamentation, I mean, one can get a glimpse of it, and there's astonishment, and there's enthusiasm. So I'm going to read maybe three examples. So it's because this is a summary of the chapter, I thought it's nice to refresh a little bit. And I'm reading from Srila Kavi Kanapura, who I guess has gives a lot of insight into moods. So here is how one particular gopi is expressing her fullness in ecstatic love, or should I say, two leaders of the gopis, I don't know, speaking simultaneously or being of the same mind, are expressing. How can I properly describe the fortune of one having eyes to see Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan? It's the ultimate limit of vision. Wandering in Vrindavan, Krishna pierces the hearts of everyone with his restless, sidelong glances. Those who see Krishna like this feel their bliss rise to the zenith. The sound of his flute makes the whole world impatient. Those who have seen the inexhaustible beauty beauty of Krishna and Balaram, tending their cows, are the most fortunate people in the world. But alas, we have been deprived of this good fortune. So these two gopis, they go on actually describing the beauty of Krishna. Despite having been deprived of this good fortune, as they put it, so that lamentation mood. beautiful peacock feathers caress their crowns, and garlands swing from their necks to ornament their elegant forms. Radiant tilak, made from various colored mineral powders, graces their foreheads. Bouquets of small creepers and flowers ornament their bodies. Thus, Krishna and Balaram please the eyes of everyone with their charming beauty as they enter Vrindavan, just like dramatic actors walking onto a stage. So, that was an example of this fullness of ecstatic love. So, there's this... this lamentation that they've not had this good fortune actually see this inexhaustible beauty of Krishna attending his cows, because remember that was one of the components of the things they described, the tending of the cows, the other is the flute playing, and of course the forest activities. So here it's putting emphasis on the tending of the cows, and we've been deprived of seeing the inexhaustible beauty of Krishna Balaram in that situation. But then they go on to actually give this elaborate description of the beauty of the small garlands ornamenting their bodies and the peacock feathers ornamenting the crowns, and that the tilak is actually shining on their forehead made of mineral powders, because I guess mineral powders, when you grind up, some of it has that mica, which is a little bit translucent. So there it is. It's actually a very perfect description. This is that fullness of ecstatic love. It's not actually that they cannot see or that they've been deprived of that in some way. There's complete insight and ability to see, despite not being actually present at the time of the herding of the cows. But that lamentation is there as part of the expression of that fullness of ecstatic love. So there's a second example of a gopi, and again, these are two gopis, leaders of a group. They're exhibiting this expression of continuous ecstasy, where there's a dread of impending separation. But still there's the astonishment and this enthusiasm. So here they are talking. So this is again from Srila Kavikarnapura. The fortunate earth holds a position higher than Brahmaloka. She is supremely worshipable because Krishna marks her with his splendid footprints. Like an independent lover drawing designs on the breasts of his beloved. The endless flow of nectar of Krishna's flute has transformed the heart of Mother Earth. As one in ecstasy experiences erect bodily hairs and thrill bumps, similarly, the grasses covering the earth stand straight up in shoots. The glories of Vrindavan are far beyond the comprehension of a person like me. here, the peacocks, feeling joyful at heart, begin gently dancing when they hear the sweet sound of Murari's Murali. Stunned by that sound, the soft leaves of the creeper blowing in the wind become motionless. So, yeah, there's little paragraph somewhere through the course of the description of the fullness of ecstatic love in the nectar of devotion, which cautions that one shouldn't speak about it, but one should just hear about it. So remembering that, I'm going to dive into the third example. Since clearly it's not one's own experience and one doesn't have insight. But so here's the third example of a gopi showing this continuous ecstasy, this fullness. And there's an attendant emotion symptomizing that ecstasy, particularly longing to see Krishna. So, O Sakhi, the deer and the doe must have performed severe penances and austerities in order to always hear Krishna's melodious flute and see his gorgeous face with their large, innocent eyes. Now we can appreciate the extent of their fortune. Hey, Sakhi, aho, look, even the female parrots are more fortunate than we are. Without any fear or inhibition, they enjoy the lotus face of Krishna, which sends forth the nectarian sound of his flute along with their husbands. Hence, they have achieved the highest perfection of the eyes. So, it's all in keeping with this idea that they expressing, but it's at the same time, there's through speaking about a third person, so to speak, Mother Earth, the parents, particular grasses on Mother Earth's body, the particular closeness of the flute to Krishna's face, they're expressing their emotions, but it's through a third party. So this is that idea that they are very apprehensive about revealing their inner mood. So I guess that's normal. I mean, one of the things, I mean, this is on a completely different note, but one of the things that I've learned getting exposed, let's say, coming from a Western culture, and I get exposed to, say, regular Indian culture, there's this method where one wants to let somebody know something, but one doesn't do it directly. So one may even call a meeting with 10 people in order to make sure that somebody hears something that is meant for them. It's a method of communication. You do it through a third party, sometimes even 10 third parties. Anyway, I always laugh about it because I, you know, one's always aware when it's intended for oneself, the communication, even in the presence of 10 other people. Because a person can't but still make eye contact with the person they intend the message for. So in the same way, the gopis have their particular ecstatic mood, but it's very clear that the emotion that's accompanying this addressing of a third party. It's very apparent. So, I'm just being humorous from a different perspective because I get exposed to this regularly, so I'm accustomed to the culture. And it always makes me laugh. So, now, Srila Prabhupada states that these examples that I've read, I chose three of them, this is the perfect example of Krishna consciousness that one somehow, and this is from this purport, that one somehow or other remains always engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. So that was the, I guess, what one would have to learn from these expressions, or this fullness of ecstatic love. So Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that these are kind of vivid examples of that it's always present in the behavior of the gopis, that they're completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So, of course, on an extremely elevated level, where, the ecstasy is pinpointed by them in these very graphic ways, whether it's the flute being close to the beautiful, innocent eyes of Lord Krishna, or whether it's the parrots unashamedly studying Krishna's face, or whether it's the grasses on the body of Mother Earth standing very erect. There's a very close understanding of the mood of ecstatic love. So, Srila Prabhupada comments when he's doing the translation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that there's actually four techniques for remembering, and you know, being able to be engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. So, there's the technique of hearing. There's the technique of expecting the Lord's mercy. There's the technique of meditation. And there's the technique of remembrance. So these are the four ways that, or four techniques that will allow one to practice becoming increasingly engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. So, so in terms of hearing, that technique as a means of becoming engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. It's a very practical act because one's linking one's ear to receive transcendental sound vibrations. So, of course, that sound vibration is then manifesting in the heart, the visuals connected to Krishna. So it means that this is allowing for that cleansing of the heart. So, you know, Krishna comes to inhabit a very clean space. And with allowing transcendental sound vibration to enter the heart, it's allowing for Krishna to take up residence in the heart. So even on a very simple level, chanting the Maha Mantra qualifies one to enter devotional life. It also allows one to understand how Krishna consciousness works. So it's extremely important to link one's ear to transcendental sound vibration. And, of course, it's got long-term consequences of coming to this platform of fullness where Krishna's completely inhabiting one's heart. That's taught by Lord Chaitanya in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy. The only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. So, it's a extremely important technique, this one of hearing, that's going to allow for this becoming engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. So that's Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kala nasta eva, nasta eva gatir ananyata. So the working of the Maha Mantra on a person, it's akin to a person sleeping in the material world, ignorant of their real self. And the analogy is made that it's analogous to a mantra that's needed to bring back to life a person that's just been bitten by a snake. So it's extremely powerful medicine. actually bringing one to life, bringing one to the life of living the real self, so to speak. So then there's the technique of expecting the Lord's mercy that's going to bring about this being engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada says that this is actually a guideline for every single devotee, this technique of expecting the Lord's mercy. So, and this is something that was taught by Lord Brahma, because Lord Brahma says, "My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim." So, as a devotee, one continues to act in Krishna consciousness, even though there's so many difficulties. Having to take the subway and was not an easy thing, I'll say, apart from the anxiety of realizing that the longer time period. I mean, somehow public holidays bring out all the persons that are on the perimeter of society, and this particular subway car or train only opened two doors. So it was one car that had four persons that, you know, are on the perimeter of society, and there's no self-control of any kind. So, you know, one man is shouting, "No, no, 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 no." And then you hear him muttering something about whatever conflict he'd run into with somebody else. Somebody else is drinking beer and got his headphones on and then just talking loudly as though he's conducting a conversation with somebody. And then somebody else is asleep, you know, having a nightmare. I mean, so there's some impediments. Some mental stress one gets exposed to even making the journey to try and perform some service. So, yeah. even with these kinds of impediments or difficulties, one continues to act in Krishna consciousness. Because one knows that these kind of actions don't produce reactions. And even though there may be continued suffering and or even enjoyment of past activities, one continues with one's Krishna conscious activities. So that's that, you know, just waiting for the Lord's mercy. So the whole while one may be going through some suffering, one is paying respectful obeisances in one's mind to Lord Krishna. And then there's the technique of remembering. And this means, this is defined as having established in one's mind this continuous relationship with Krishna. So, you know, practicing and practicing. So the remembering is actually comes to be naturally there when Krishna is established, or this relationship with Krishna is established in one's mind. And that definition is given in Nectar of Devotion for what remembering actually is. So it's not just, you know, casual remembering. It's actually Krishna is established. That relationship with Krishna is established. So, and because it's in connection with this particular chapter that we've been reading, I thought I'll just use an example of Srila Sanatan Goswami, who uses his remembrance, this establishment of his relationship with Krishna, as prayers. So he says, this is in connection with this particular chapter, your unique resounding flute makes the peacocks dance, turns the flock of birds on the tree branches into painted pictures, and steals the hearts of all living beings. So that's his remembrance. Yeah, he's actually visualizing that the birds are like painted pictures, immobilized by the sound of the flute. And in fact, all the hearts of everyone get stolen by the sound. So it's a very subtle expression of this kind of remembrance that Srila Sanatana Goswami has. Very beautiful. And finally, the technique of meditation. So now meditation is actually defined. There's a definition for meditation. It's engaging the mind to think of the form of the Lord, engaging the mind to think of the qualities of the Lord, and engaging the mind to think of the activities of the Lord. So not the general definition for meditation. One doesn't see any pictures of the Lord Krishna's form in any meditation studio. Very seldom. I think I haven't. again, Srila Sanatana Goswami. So this is how he's meditating. This form of the Lord, activities of the Lord, pastimes of the Lord. Tree trunks bear new sprouts out of loving attraction, and trees bend from where they, when they hear the song of your flute. Resplendent in the dress of a cowherd, you incite the lust of the gopis. So very short, brief, but there you have it. He's meditating. The form of the Lord resplendent in his dress. He's meditating. There's trees bending down, bowing down to Lord Krishna. And, of course, those trees are hearing the sound of his flute. And he's, at the same time, inciting lust in the heart of the gopis. So it's a very deep meditation. But I've read it because it's connected to this particular section that we're reading of Srila Sanatana Goswami. So, and Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, so Subala is spending time in teaching persons that are going to become yoga teachers, courses in Bhagavad Gita. So as part of all their training on breath control and asanas, they're also getting to hear Bhagavad Gita. So here's Krishna, the same message. And this is Bhagavad Gita 8:9. Krishna says, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, and you will attain me without a doubt. So you see this idea of this mind and intelligence. I mean, the gopis exemplified in the most extraordinary way using their intelligence for what they want to achieve, to give expression to their ecstatic love, and in such an extremely intelligent way, and at the same time revealing their minds, although there's that apprehension of doing so, but doing it with such intelligence that it's a little bit concealed. And and ultimately, this is these techniques that are given Srila Prabhupada writing in Nectar of Devotion for ways of actually coming to be engrossed in thoughts of Krishna, meaning filling one's mind, developing that spiritual mind just filled with thoughts of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada says that thinking of Krishna and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, they are will free one from material contamination. So that's the ultimate goal, that one gradually cleans up the mind and allows one's intelligence to work in relationship to Krishna and one's relationship with him. So these are some thoughts on the summary of this chapter. So if there's any thought on this topic.
Mother Krishna Arjuna, thank you for the class. You mentioned these four things that Srila Prabhupada describes in the Nectar of Devotion as techniques for being able to remember Krishna. They were, I believe, hearing, waiting, longing for his mercy. What was the third one?
It's
remembrance itself?
Yes, and meditation.
Meditation. So I was wondering where exactly in the Nectar of Devotion does Prabhupada say that? And also,
where is it?
And also, yeah, and also if you could elaborate on this point of longing for his mercy, how does that allow us to become absorbed in him?
There's, it's entitled, the chapter's entitled Techniques for Hearing and Remembering, I think. Yeah. So I was making a connection in this particular class because the concern is how one actually gets engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. So I thought there's, so I made the connection with the techniques that Srila Prabhupada lists. And your question was?
If you could elaborate a little bit on how longing for his mercy will lead us to being absorbed in thoughts of him.
Yes. Actually, I've always found that one quite graphic for assisting in being absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Like, I'll give an example from personal life. since the idea is that there's still, you know, the particular karmic things, of course, controlled by Krishna, but one has some enjoyment, one has some suffering to go through in one's lifetime. So, because one's consciousness is more on an elevated spiritual plane, because one is hearing the holy name, one is trying to hear the transcendental sound vibration of the Srimad Bhagavatam, naturally one is able to be a little bit distant or more objective about those sufferings and enjoyments. So where the component of being able to bring one, having the whole experience bring one closer to Krishna is that one is actually needing to pray a great deal through those times of the suffering, karmic sufferings or the karmic enjoyments, even though one is a little bit distant from it, thanks to being on a you know, different plane of reality. So the example I want to bring up was, I was visiting in Johannesburg a short while back, and I had to go through being present with my one parent, my mother leaving her body, or I wasn't directly present when she was leaving her body, but at least leading up to it. And I had brought the deity of Lord Nrsingadev with me through the time of being there. So it's an extremely violent city. Through the history of the country, there was a lot of repression and suppression of huge amounts of people and very deliberately engineered. So the society has had to readjust with changes, and you know, people have had to find new positions in the social order. And anyway, there's of course naturally, I guess, persons from the outside that take advantage of situations, because apparently many Europeans control crime rings that happen in the city. So I was warned left, right, and center that I wasn't allowed to walk. And this was new for me, because I've always, in past visits, I've walked and been conscious. One has to be aware. So, you know, naturally one doesn't walk at night or something like that. But in this particular case, I was warned I shouldn't even walk in the day. So anyway, I was constantly using taxi services to get from any point. I didn't walk at all. And through the time of being there, I was fervently praying to Lord Nisringadev that, you know, I would always make intelligent decisions in terms of, you know, how I planned my day, what I exposed myself to, and also that with coming to do kirtan for my mother, that, you know, there wouldn't be offensiveness, because that would be to her detriment, because it's the same thing, you know, a faithless person, you don't give them the holy name. So I was a little concerned. So it made me redouble my remembrance of Lord Nisringadev every single day. The 7 days that I went through was going to do kirtan in some private hospital with you know, a lot of attendant nurses, doctors, and the bizarre way in which treatment is done. You know, there's a 92-year-old body and they're pumping adrenaline to, you know, boost the heart and a whole bag of painkiller gets pumped into the body in order to turn the body a little bit. I mean, it's completely bizarre. I'm giving this example to just say how I became more and more absorbed in thoughts of Lord Krishna, Lord Nisringadev, just actually realizing this very, you could say it's verges on demoniac kind of lack of connectedness with Lord Krishna, that such bizarre things are done to an elderly body, all in the name of, you know, looking after. And also this whole climate of the fear and violence. So, indeed, there's no doubt that, you know, going through some karmic reaction, that's the city I was born in, that's the city I was having to visit, go see the end of a parent's life in that city, in a particular climate. It certainly increased my waiting for the Lord's mercy. Kindly protect, kindly allow this person not to be offensive in any way, to be accepting of hearing kirtan. And yes, on a personal level, I'd say that as one's going through these kind of, you could say, reactions, it definitely increases one's engrossment in thoughts of Krishna, because that's where one turns. I mean, one doesn't turn to anything. I mean, I made the necessary physical arrangements, but internally, my shelter was Lord Krishna, Lord Nisringadev. And I felt that's where my protection lies. And, so I responded with an example.
Thank you. That was a very vivid personal journey to drive home the point.
Thank you.
Thank you for your class. You were mentioning regarding hearing, but before I mentioned that, you were describing some of the quotes of the gopis where they're expressing Krishna's beauty and they're enamored by his flute playing. And we see throughout the scriptures, many prayers, Queen Kunti, so many other prayers. Basically, generally speaking, we see that Krishna's beauty is factual. His music playing is factual. So we see in the material world, people glorify all this beauty and their powers of speaking or their musical abilities. But we see that Putana, she was beautiful, but why wasn't she wonderful? She was a demon. And so I'm just sharing with you one thing I appreciate you reminding me of. In the ninth canto, chapter 11, verse 20 and 21, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that when Lord Rama built the floating stone bridge on the sea, that's considered wonderful, right? Wrong. It says that does not constitute his glories. Then the next verse says, what's his actual glories? It says his characteristics constitute his glories. And the reason I appreciate that is because if building a floating stone bridge or performing some amazing mystical abilities or having the power of beauty, if these things are considered glorious, that means that Putana, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, all these demons, they could do the exact same thing. But why weren't they wonderful? They were demons. They had no characteristics. And you were mentioning one thing I'll share with you last point regarding the hearing point. These are the techniques for hearing. And I was discussing this with a devotee recently because the reason I appreciate that is because we see in the introduction of the Gita, Prabhupada mentions, he says, Lord Chaitanya says that we should not hear from the Mayavadis. But we see that Lord Chaitanya, look at his characteristics. He listened to Amayavadi, Sarvabhama Bhattacharya, for 7 days straight, without interrupting, without rolling his eyes, without criticizing. Now, on the flip side of the coin, look at Sri Devananda Pandit. This is in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, chapter 21, I believe, the Madhya Khan, chapter 21. It's described that Devananda Pandit was proud of his speaking abilities. He was known for giving Bhagavatam class. So when Srivas Thakur entered his class, he was like, wow. He started crying in ecstasy, sighing. He was actually appreciating Devananda Pandit's class. But Devananda Pandit, he couldn't tolerate this crying. He considered a nuisance that he had his students throw Srivas Thakur. So we see on one hand, Lord Chaitanya can tolerate hearing Amayavadi for 7 days straight. Devananda Pandit, he couldn't tolerate hearing a Vaishnava's appreciation of his class for 7 seconds straight. And the last point I want to mention regarding this hearing process that one devotee mentioned to me reminds me of the Mohini pastime. He was mentioning that he speaks Krishna Katha. He calls his one devotee Amataji. And I know both of them. I'm not going to mention their name. And they're both wonderful devotees. But he even told her, he was like, when I hear you and I speak to you and discuss Krishna Katha, this is what he told me. He also told her, he says that I could be talking to her for 3 hours straight, but it seems like 5 minutes. And recently, another devotee, this same devotee who did this, who told me this, he entered the temple one day, and he ignored one man Vaishnava, one man devotee. He comes every now and then, but still, he's a wonderful devotee who comes whenever he can. But this devotee who told me hearing this Mataji for 3 hours seems like 5 minutes, he ignored this person when he came to the temple. So this devotee came up to me. He says, I've known this devotee so many years. How could he ignore me? And so then I, since I don't do this behind the back stuff, I went up to this devotee. I was like, his feelings was hurt. Why don't you talk to him? Because, why'd you ignore him? I was there when he ignored him. I was like, wow. So he had the discussion with him. He told this devotee, the reason I ignored you is because it's not my intention. Is that because I'm trying to focus on my Vaidhi Bhati. I'm trying to focus on my schedule. So, I'm trying to, get in the temple and leave the building and focus on my sadhana. So please forgive me. However, 2 minutes later, this same girl came up and he started talking to her for a half hour straight. And so this reminds me of the Putana, the Mohini pastime. The demons were very aggressive and disrespectful towards the demigods. But when they saw Mohini, they could speak to her for hours straight. So my question is that what are some steps we could do to, we see that, what are some steps we could look at that whether we're actually pleasing the Lord and not fooling ourselves to think that, I'm sincere in my practice in Christian conscience. How can we distinguish whether we're, you know, fooling ourselves that we're sincere in our Christian conscience? This is very obvious. So maybe you could spend on these points. My question wasn't so clear, but.
You were looking at this point of sincerity, actually, that one is genuinely pleasing Lord Krishna. So, I mean, usually the barometer for knowing if one's pleasing Lord Krishna is feeling a sense of satisfaction oneself. And so, of course, one doesn't know the internal workings of somebody one is observing. One can't tell, you know, how they're processing. But often it's externally visible when one sees a person who's very satisfied with performing devotional service. There's a certain happiness, a certain lightness, a certain sparkle in the eye, a certain enthusiasm, a certain willingness to reach out to others. I think it's even one making judgment of somebody else's sincerity or lack of sincerity is a little difficult. It's fraught with danger. One doesn't fully know a person's process. But if one sees enthusiasm and happiness and, you know, genuine desire to correct something, if something's brought to the attention of some possible fault, all is well. each person is trying to utilize these techniques of hearing or remembering. Well, remembering takes time. It's not something that's there right away, but meditating on coming to see the deity. I mean, there's an elderly gentleman that comes every morning, and he sits for 15 minutes, just sits gazing at the deity. That's meditating on the form of the Lord. One may do that internally, one may do it externally, literally sitting in front of the form of the Lord. And hearing. So each person who's attempting to apply these techniques to allow themselves to be filled with thoughts of Krishna, one has to take as being sincere. And how their behavior manifests externally with regard to their dealings with others, well, that's there may be learned patterns of behavior. Some have to change. Some have to be altered. But one can't really judge from the outside. As long as the techniques have been applied by a person, they're on their way towards removing some of that, behavior that sometimes isn't quite smooth. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Slightly late, my apologies again for my forgetting about the public holiday and the train situation. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.